Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. I was very happy to see early this week that the cabinet decided to approve the establishment of a museum in Jerusalem in honor of Albert Einstein. And I can't think of anything that is more overdue than this particular decision. Admittedly, it's going to cost $18 million in order to construct the museum, which will be constructed on the campus of the Hebrew University in Givat Ram. And in fact, all of Einstein's documents, his archives, was all bequeathed to the Hebrew University when he died. He was one of the founders of the Hebrew University, and so had very, very close links to the university. And since his documents were all donated to the university, they've been stored in something called the Albert Einstein Archives. Tens of thousands of items related to the world-famous scientist Albert Einstein. And I can't imagine why they wouldn't have been made more publicly available. This man has really is a brand. He's really a brand in today's terms. There's nobody who doesn't know about him, and he really made massive contributions in the form of scientific knowledge. He was a genius. He was amazingly intelligent. His links to Israel, to Judaism, to Zionism were undoubted. He was offered the presidency of Israel, and it was fascinating what he said when he returned it down. He said he was deeply moved by the offer to be the president of Israel, but that he felt that his expertise was in objective matters and that he lacked what he called both the natural aptitude and the experience to deal properly with people and to exercise official functions.
I'm sure absolutely right, because
I can't imagine anything would have been more true than that.
Yeah. What is interesting is the point that you made earlier, is that he's a global brand in that pretty much everybody around the world knows him, but I would imagine very few know that A, he was Jewish, and B, how strong his ties to Israel were, which means that as Jews and as supporters of Israel, it's quite surprising that it hasn't been utilized more and publicized more, because I think it's of tremendous value.
I think that this is the first step. I mean, there is this famous statue of Einstein, which is on the Givat Ram campus of the Hebrew University. It's a relatively small statue, but, you know, he is a massive name. I don't know whether he as a person really sought the publicity, and whether he, you know, was the brand that we see him as today, but certainly the legacy that he's left is undoubted. And I think that this would be just the minimum that could be done, first of all, in order to honor him and his achievements. Second of all, to show a true link to his Judaism and to his support for Israel. And of course, to allow the massive amounts of knowledge and scientific development that he undertook to become more publicly available. So that is something that's slated to happen on the campus of the Hebrew University in Givat Ram in due course. And I think that it will be a big attraction. I think that people would be very interested to go along there and to learn a little bit more about the person who is so famous. Just on another note, and completely unrelated, before we move on, I noticed that Israel has the sixth highest number of marriages in the world. And we so love these lists of the first and the best and the biggest and the worst and the top 10 and the bottom 10 and all that kind of thing. So Israel apparently places sixth in the world with 5.3 marriages per 1,000. That's how they decide how many marriages there are per population. And apparently Israel is just ahead of the United States, which came as a big surprise to me, which has 5.1 marriages per 1,000. But this is the bit that really caught my attention. Top of the list of the number of marriages per 1,000 people is Cyprus. 8.9 marriages per 1,000. Wow. Now, this is what I was thinking about Cyprus. I know that The Cypriots come from a very traditional Greek Orthodox background where the culture really supports the idea of getting married. And so it comes, and of course, it's a relatively small population, and a lot of intermingling in Cyprus. Everybody knows everybody there, very intimate society. But I just wonder how many of those 8.9 marriages per 1,000 are actually Israelis who have run to Cyprus to get married, as so many people do, because they want to try and escape having to be married under the auspices of the Rabbanut. Now, I don't know if the survey actually factored all of that into account, whether they looked at people who come from abroad to get married as opposed to people who are local citizens who get married. I don't know whether the survey actually took that into consideration, but I do know that there are a fair few Israelis who do go to Cyprus, and so I wonder whether this might not have skewed somehow the statistics. Anyway, just to round out the top three, Hungary was in second place, and third was Turkey. And we understand that both Hungary and Turkey have got quite significant financial benefits offered by the government in forms of tax breaks and things like that, that people get in order once they've become married. So I don't know whether it's to try and incentivize them to get married or what it is, but certainly once you get married in those countries, there is a certain financial benefit that you manage to attain. And so that might well also skew the statistics. Just some interesting snippets to start the morning.
Very, very interesting indeed. Gas is due to begin flowing from the Karish gas field. Tell us about this. How significant so is this moment?
Yeah, it's a very significant moment. The Ministry of Energy yesterday granted a permit to produce gas for the Karish gas field. Karish obviously is a name that has been, along with the other names of the various gas fields off the coast of Israel. Karish meaning shark. We also have Leviathan, which means whale. So Leviathan is already producing a gas and has already been producing gas for some time. And now Karish will join. We, of course, know that the rig has been there for some time, very, very controversial with the Lebanon border, maritime border dispute. But yesterday, the Ministry of Energy granted the permit for gas to flow. Not that there was any doubt in the beginning that the permit would be granted, but I think the timing is everything. And in that, I mean that we have finally now heard that the maritime border dispute has been resolved, even though the agreements have not been signed. We understand from the mediator, Avi Hochman, who has been the U.S. mediator to resolve the issue between Lebanon and Israel. We understand that there will be a signing ceremony of the maritime border agreement tomorrow, later during the day. So that hasn't yet been signed, but apparently it'll be signed tomorrow after cabinet approval is expected earlier tomorrow. So the Ministry of Energy jumped the gun a little bit and said, even before the maritime border agreement has been signed, we are going to sign off the fact that Karish can finally begin producing its gas. And so that is exactly what will happen. And we expect that gas will begin flowing, if not today, then tomorrow, very, very soon. Everything's ready. Everything is good to go. The gas will be shipped from offshore. The rig itself is located 80 kilometers west off the coast of Israel, right along the Lebanese border in the north. And that gas will then come to some sort of an offshore rig, which will be like a storage facility. And from there, it will be moved via an undersea pipeline towards the Israeli shore. And from there, either to consumers in Israel, or as we already know, there is a pipeline that travels from Israel to Egypt, where there is a facility that allows the gas to be loaded onto ships and potentially taken to Europe from there or shipped elsewhere. So we're on the verge of what is, I think, a very, very significant moment, not only from an economic perspective, because obviously the gas flow helps Israel's economy tremendously, not only in the form of employing people and in the form of suppliers who will be supplying the offshore rigs and who will be supplying the industry that is revolving around the offshore gas. But of course, there will be taxes and there will be money that will go into Israel's newly established sovereign wealth fund from the flow of gas. And of course, European countries are looking to Israel now to supply them with as much gas as we possibly can in order to replace the Russian gas that has been switched off as a result of the war in Ukraine.
Absolutely incredible that this moment has finally arrived, and it is something worth stopping, noting, and of course celebrating. President Herzog will present evidence of Iranian drones in Ukraine to President Biden. Why is this necessary? I thought it was accepted that the Russians were using Iranian drones.
I thought so too. It's become evident that the Iranians are apparently denying the fact that their drones are being used in Ukraine by Russia. But we understand that President Herzog has traveled to the U.S. for his meeting later today at the White House with President Biden, and he has brought evidence. He has brought pictures. He has brought other intelligence that has been gained about the drones that have crashed in Ukraine because these are kamikaze drones, many of them, that they actually are designed to crash into things and to explode upon impact. And so we understand that President Herzog will be presenting this to President Biden, but there are so many subtexts in this meeting. We saw yesterday that President Herzog met with Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State. He also met with Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the House in the U.S. Very, very interesting meetings that they had indeed. Antony Blinken shared some concerns about what's going on in the West Bank right now, about the current heightened tensions, about the loss of life on both Israeli and Palestinian sides in this current violent situation that we're seeing with the situation in the West Bank. And of course, Antony Blinken said that there is a need for all parties to de-escalate. They spoke about security concerns and, of course, about Iran's drone presence. And I think the subtext is really Iran what Iran is up to, and potentially trying to convince the United States even more than maybe the case right now that a very hardline approach towards Iran is necessary, and potentially trying to convince the United States that the Iranian nuclear agreement, which President Biden seemed so intent on re-entering, is not necessarily the best idea. And I think that that's really the subtext, is in order to just to try to reinforce the view that Israel has about not supporting in Iran and not allowing any flow of funds to Iran that might result from the re-signing of the nuclear agreement. But of course, one of the other subtexts, and I'm guessing you guys have had a chance to think and talk about this, Howard, is the whole Kanye West story that's going on in the US right now. And we as Jews and we as Israelis simply can't ignore it. It's a real issue. And for those people who haven't yet had the opportunity to listen to the Piers Morgan interview that he did with Kanye West, I would like to recommend that you do so. Try and find it and listen to that interview, because Piers Morgan was very, very intent on pushing Kanye West to say, why are you saying it's Jewish businessmen who are raping your people? Because those were the words that Kanye West used in the interview, Jewish businessmen raping my people. So as Piers Morgan says, why do you have to say Jewish businessmen? Why can't you just say businessmen, people, raping my people? So Kanye West answers him, well, there were businessmen who are raping my people, but they all happen to be Jewish, okay? So he really wasn't backing down from that. And before he was banned on social media, Kanye West had more followers on his social media accounts than there are Jews in the world. So let's just talk about the influence that he has when he says things. And this is going down in the U.S. like a huge issue. And I have little doubt that President Herzog will be addressing this and the potential impact on anti-Semitism that Jews in the United States might have to endure as a result of this real outbreak. I know it's a discussion all unto itself, and I don't intend to hijack our conversation now. I have a lot to say about what's been going on in the whole Kanye West story. The good news is that the relationship with Israel and the United States between the two countries is very good. There's an upcoming election in Israel, of course, next week, which I'm sure the president will talk about. Equally, the United States president has midterm elections coming up, and he will be concerned to ensure that his situation is reinforced to the extent that's possible during the midterm. So all of that's going to be very fascinating to watch during today's meeting at the White House.
Absolutely. And finally, Israeli triathletes will compete in a competition in Saudi Arabia. And this, again, to me, is just one of those spectacular moments.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something that I couldn't allow just to pass 100%. Without talking about, because we know that Israel and Saudi Arabia do not yet have formal diplomatic relations in place, and yet these things are happening, which makes a massive difference to the world and to our situation in the Middle East. I'm talking here about triathlete Shachar Sagiv. He participates in this thing called a Super League, which involves a number of different competitions around the world. In the latest competition that he participated in, he was the fastest cyclist in the competition, and he ultimately ended up I think coming in 8th place in the most recent competition. And of course, Saudi Arabia is one of those locations which hosts one of the events in the Super League. And the Super League, and each event is important because it counts towards qualification for the next Olympic Games. So the Saudis have now allowed, given official approval, for Shachar to go along and to participate in the triathlon competition that will take place over the weekend. Shachar's brother, also participates, and the two of them actually both participated. His brother called Run. They both participated in the recent, the most recent Olympic Games in Tokyo. They finished in 20th and 35th place in the triathlon competition. But I think that Shachar is hoping to do a little bit better in the upcoming Olympic Games, and so he's very, very eager to qualify. And officially been given approval to participate in Saudi Arabia. Good for the Saudi Arabian authorities. We're very, very pleased that that is the case, even though there are no diplomatic relations. And I think that this is just further evidence of how the world, and in particular the Middle East, is changing.